Call the Senate State Affairs Committee hearing to order. Today's date is January 25th, 2011. The time is 9:02 in the morning. Today is the first meeting of the 2011 Senate State Affairs Committee. I want to welcome my Vice Chair, Senator Pasfan, as well as Senate Majority Leader Kevin Myers and Senators Kukesh and Geisel. I'd also like to recognize that this is the first committee hearing for Senator Geisel. Welcome.
Thanks.
And we're pleased to have you on the Senate State Affairs Committee. Look forward to your contributions. I also want to recognize in the audience we have Senator French and the former chair of the State Affairs Committee, Senator Menard, who I know I have big shoes to fill. Welcome. Also want to introduce my committee secretary, our committee secretary, Kathy Ellis, and our committee aide, Michelle Seideman. Michelle was one of two committee aides last year for the Senate Resources Committee, and if there's anything any of the committee members need or the public needs to get a hold of her, she's in room 101. And we also have Karen Stewart, who's the new LIO moderator. And for those of you not familiar with the committee's mandate, just take a brief moment to review. According to the uniform rules, our mandate is to oversee the programs and activities of the Office of the Governor and the Departments of Administration, Military and Veterans Affairs, Corrections, and Public Safety, as well as the Public Facilities section of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. In reality, the committee is a catch-all for many bills affecting the conduct of state government in Alaska, so we have the ability to look broadly at the goals and effectiveness of state agencies. In the coming weeks, we will likely call the leaders of various departments before us to discuss challenges and discuss the issues that they face, so we'll be better prepared to exercise our oversight responsibility. For the next 2 weeks, however, we will hear a number of bills that have been referred to this committee. Today we have two bills before us. The first is Senate Bill 31 regarding the counting of write-in votes. This bill was filed in the wake of the recent United States Senate race and has several prime sponsors, including Senators Thomas, French, Menard, and myself. The second is Senate Bill 33, a bill that will ensure that a soldier's burial wishes are honored in the tragic event that he or she is killed in the line of duty. Before we begin, I want to emphasize that my door is open, and if any committee members have any suggestions or ideas for overviews, please feel free to drop by to relay them or to discuss any committee issues. So we'll start off with Senate Bill 31, the counting of write-in votes. I understand Senator Thomas is in the Finance Committee meeting, so his staffer, Grier Hopkins, will be present. We'll present the bill. Welcome, Mr. Hopkins. Could you please come forward and put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grier Hopkins, for the record. I work for Senator Joe Thomas from Fairbanks. Thank you for having me here today for the hearing on Senate Bill 31. Senator Thomas, of course, as Mr. Chairman said, is not able to make it here today, but he is in his first Finance Committee meeting of the year, and he thanks you for hearing the bill. I'd also like to thank the co-prime sponsors that attend the hearing also, Senator Menard, Senator French, and yourself, Senator Willikowski. Thank you. As you're all well aware, Alaska just went through an historic election. For the first time in over 50 years, an election for the United States Senate was won by a write-in candidate. This also was followed by a two-month-long court battle where the Alaska Supreme Court, the Alaska Superior Court, and a federal district court judge all found in favor of ensuring Alaska voters' intent and making sure that as many people are as enfranchised as possible when they go to cast their ballot. This follows on the tails of nearly 50 years of court precedent in Alaska, spanning numerous cases and numerous election issues, all finding in support and in favor of voter intent. As you can see from page 4 of your bill packet, entitled Quotes of Significance to Senate Bill 31 from the United States Senate Court Findings, each court decision used strong language stating the importance of voter intent and that the statutory language we currently have dealing with write-in ballots is murky and open to interpretation. As you can see, the first quote up there from the Superior Court Judge William Carey says, quote, in general, AS 1515-360 in general is terse and somewhat unclear in comparison to the other state statutes. In addition to that, you can go down the list, and fifth quote down the list, the uniformed is by the Alaska Supreme Court decision in Miller v. Treadwell, and recommends the specific language proposed in Senate Bill 31 from the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Advisory Voting Act. That's where they got the idea that this specific language proposed would help solve our problem that we see in statute. The Senate Bill 31 looks to clarify this statutory problem by utilizing, like I said, the language recommended in Miller v. Treadwell in the decision by the Alaska Supreme Court. And the language, of course, is nearly identical to that in the Uniformed Overseas and Citizens Absentee Voting Act. The intent of Senate Bill 31 is twofold. First, to clarify our state language to ensure that future elections, as many Alaskans are enfranchised as possible, throwing a ballot out based simply on a minor error such as an abbreviation or a mismark won't happen anymore as long as the director is still able to judge the voter's intent. When the director uses a uniform standard in determining this intent, the courts have ruled that one person judging all of the ballots uniformly counts as equal treatment of the ballots. This allows write-in counts, such as Lisa M., to still not count and not fall under the voter intent determination because it does not, quote, appear as it did in the declaration of candidacy by that write-in candidate, which is required under 15-15-360A-11, which I believe is in on page 2, line 19 of the bill. This word appears came under substantial scrutiny by the courts. They determined that if the legislature had intended to require an exact spelling of that name on the write-in ballot, that the legislature would have used a more specific term, such as perfect or same as or identical. The word appears, according to the courts, is meant to show some latitude in what will be accepted by the director when judging a ballot. This language then puts into statute that there is some latitude involved when judging these ballots and that the intent of the voter is, of course, paramount as opposed to a technicality. It's more important to keep people in the voting process and give them the benefit of the doubt. For example, Murkowski with a C is still close enough to appear like Lisa Murkowski on her declaration of candidacy, but not Lisa M. There's a number of examples in the back of your bill packet you can look at. Those are pictures taken during the counting process of specific ballots. The second reason for Senate Bill 31 is to tighten our statute language and strengthen the public's perception of Alaska's democratic process. By having clear, concise language showing how the votes are determined, this will hopefully alleviate some of the outcry we saw following the November 2 election and the subsequent counting process. Hopefully it will also reduce some potential litigation in the future. Senate Bill 31's goal of ensuring fundamental rights and voter enfranchisement and putting clear language into statute, inclusive rather than exclusive language, will help protect the fundamental democratic rights of Alaskans who enter the polling booth with a wide variety of backgrounds and abilities. Thank you, and I urge your support of Senate Bill 31, and I'm available for any questions. Additionally, we have Gail Fanumiai, the Director of Division of Elections here, and Sarah Felix from the Department of Law, if there are any more specific questions, such as the methods used for counting ballots or what, such as things like that.
Thank you, Grier. Any questions? Yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just make sure I understand this correctly. Thank you for your presentation, though. It's very, very thorough. So the director will be in charge of determining voter intent. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then so will the director and or Division of Elections come up with a uniform standards of voter intent? So when this director moves on and 20, 30 years from now we have a new director, will it be clear what are the uniform standards for determining intent?
I would like to actually, refer that question to Director Gail Fanumiai, who just went through the entire process. We have similar questions dealing with if there's a Smith versus a Smith in the write-in process, how are you going to be able to determine voter intent? It's a specific question that's going to have to cover each.
Like in my case, Meyer versus Myers, very common mistake, but
yes, sir.
But two different names.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did you want to bring up Ms. Finn?
It's up to you, Mr. Chairman. I can wait in if there's other questions for the sponsor.
Okay. Other questions for the bill sponsor? All right. Thank you, Grier. Let's bring up Ms. Fanumiai. welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail Finumiai, Division of Elections. And I have with me Sarah Felix from the
Great. Let me just say, you and I have one thing in common. Neither of us could ever run for a write-in campaign.
One thing more in common, I would never want to.
You heard the question that was asked. I know there are some that would prefer right in the statute having a little bit more delineation about what the law is, and there are others who prefer that it be done by the division director, and if you could just talk about what your thoughts are on that, if you have any.
Well, as the Supreme Court ruled, they felt it was to the benefit of the voters in the state that they had one person who was making that decision versus a variety of individuals, such as a number of people perhaps on an election board. And that is what the division did during the 2010 general election write-in process. The division used a common sense approach as far as looking at the candidates who had filed as write-in candidates for the U.S. Senate race, and used a phonetic spelling, if the name could be phonetically pronounced, and I felt that the intent of the voter was clear. With some minor misspellings, then the vote was then counted accordingly for Senator Murkowski.
Okay, questions? Yes, Senator Pastor.
Yes, you know, I, in reading the Miller versus Treadwell opinion, I think that it's the pages 2 through 6 kind of give the 50-year history of election law in Alaska, but on page 14, you know, commenting upon the common sense approach. I think that it's important to understand what the Supreme Court was trying to indicate, where they say, quote, common sense statutory interpretations by agencies do not require regulations. And then they continue, the division's statutory interpretations were common sense interpretations and were not required to be promulgated in regulations. And then I think the most important conclusion that they draw, it continues, quote, a requirement that each such interpretation be preceded by rulemaking would result in complete ossification of the regulatory state. And so I think that if we try to be all-inclusive in our definition at this time, you know, you will result, you know, we will create an ossification of this process, and I think that that will ultimately potentially result in the disenfranchisement of voters, and so that's what concerns me if we try to get too precise in our definitions at this time. And so I agree that common sense has to guide the division director, and that's what the law of the land is right now.
Yeah, good points. Senator Kukesh, did you have a question?
Yeah, my question is very straightforward. Having gone through this, does this bill satisfy any concerns you may have in the future? And are you supportive of it?
Through the chair, Senator Kukesh, I mean, the bill does provide statutory language, you know, that is backed by the decision of the Supreme Court. And there are some technical issues with the way the bill has been drafted that the Department of Law is here to address. But in the past, the Division of Elections has not necessarily always implemented in statute the rulings of the courts. And so, in cases such as this, we relied on statute as well as prior court decisions. Sometimes people feel it is helpful to have the statutory wording in black and white in election law.
Other questions for Ms. Finumiai? Yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do respect you know, your intent and your common sense approach, and I think you did an excellent job this last election. But again, talking about the future, I think we're going to want this common sense approach to be consistent from director to director. Do you develop some sort of uniform standards or rules as to how you determine what is common sense? Because common sense can vary so greatly between all of us.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer. I really believe it's going to depend on the cases surrounding the candidates who are running for office. You know who the candidates are on the write-in list, and I believe that, you know, in consultation with the Department of Law, minor misspellings, if you can phonetically say the name, granted there are issues with a one-syllable name like Smith versus Smythe, this situation was different, and there could be a lot of, you know, what ifs situations, hypothetical situations out there, and I really truly believe they have to be addressed just on an election by election basis. The division does not make decisions like this just, you know, snap decisions. We consult heavily with the Department of Law. The whole process that was used for the 2010 election was heavily vetted through the Department of Law, through their elections team, and I feel it was a very thorough process.
Okay, other questions? Okay, Ms. Felix, if you could give us your take on this, and if you have suggestions to make it any better, or what the Department of Law's opinion is on the way the bill is drafted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I did have some suggestions, but I understand that there's been a committee substitute proposed. I was going to speak to SB 31 as it was written as of yesterday, but this morning I was handed a CS that appears to address many of our concerns. The major concern that our office had was that paragraph 13 provided for counting of the
votes. Could I just, well, let me take care of a couple of housekeeping things. Are you referring to A or B?
Oh, my goodness, A or B. I've got version A, SB 31, and then the work draft committee substitute looks like it's got a B on it.
Yeah, if I could get a motion to adopt the CS / B.
I would move that we adopt Senate Bill number 31, version B, the CS.
Is there any discussion, any objection? Okay, the / B is adopted. If you can't, then that's fine. We can work off A, but
can I talk about both of
absolutely,
them?
Absolutely.
Okay. So our main concern was that in version A, in paragraph 13, it talked about the election board counting the votes for write-in candidates. But in practice, the director was making those determinations on voter intent, and that was for very good reason. In the Bush v. Gore United States Supreme Court litigation, in that case, it was the U.S. Supreme Court found that it was very important that there be a consistent determiner of voter intent, and so having the director of elections being that single person making those determinations was very important to the process. So we were going to recommend that you make paragraph 13 a new subsection D, and that it say that the director would disregard any abbreviations, misspellings, or other minor variations in the form of the name of the candidate. And I see from version B, the work draft, that apparently,
if I could just interrupt you for 1 second, that was my mistake. Actually, it was actually a / M was the original version, I believe. So
the original version was. Oh, it is. It is / M. I'm so sorry, Mr. Chairman. Okay, the original version / M. I don't know where I got the A. Sorry. And the work draft / B appears to have taken care of our concerns by adding in subsection A that the election board or director, as may be appropriate, shall count ballots according to the following rules, revising paragraph 13 to say the election board or director shall disregard any abbreviations, misspellings, or minor variations in the form of the name of the candidate if the intention of the voter can be ascertained. And I see in section 2 of version B you have codified a slightly revised version of the current administrative regulation on counting write-in votes, 6AAC 25085, and it added a paragraph 2 that says, a paragraph C2 that says, in an election for federal or statewide office, the director shall count all write-in votes under AS 15-15-360. So it seems like your capable, alleged legal drafter, Alpheus Bullard, has addressed our concerns, and we appreciate that.
So you support / B?
Well, I don't think our office makes statements of support or not support of bills, but to accomplish what you're seeking to accomplish, I think that / B would do that.
Okay, fantastic. Questions? Yes, Senator Pasvan.
You know, again, kind of my concern is that by trying to precisely define something, that we create more litigation down the road. And with a strong 50-year history in Alaska of allowing common sense interpretation and trying to reasonably find what voter intent is so that we do not disenfranchise any voters, would a, if something needs to be done, do we say, and this is just a conceptual idea, in counting votes for a write-in candidate, the standards and guidelines set forth by the Alaska Supreme Court in Miller versus Treadwell, in which the state of Alaska prevailed, are adopted, and the Division of Elections shall follow those standards and guidelines?
Through the chair, it's not been my experience to see statutes drafted to incorporate a reference to an Alaska Supreme Court case. As the director, Ms. Fanumiai, stated, the division does heavily rely on the Supreme Court precedent that you are highlighting in their work in counting ballots. They're very aware of that. Our office is very aware of that. And the division did follow the prior cases, for instance, Bryce v. Edgman, in counting ballots in the U.S. Senate race. So that conceptual amendment might be a bit awkward. I've never seen anything like that before, and I think that it's sort of a given. It's in the background, and the division is obviously going to rely upon that Supreme Court case. And this proposed version B statute would be a great framework to frame the Alaska Supreme Court's decision and keep it in the background for the division's future work.
Yes, Senator Pasvan.
So you're not worried that by trying to define language, it would be viewed as a limitation on the Miller versus Treadwell standards and guidelines?
Version B, through the chair, version B, a limit on the Supreme Court? I view this as a procedural bill, not a substantive bill. It's not setting out standards. It doesn't include the standards, except for subparagraph 13 on any abbreviation, misspelling, or other minor variation. That, I think that's what you're asking about, paragraph 13. Is that limiting the Alaska Supreme Court's decision in Miller v. Treadwell? That language is taken from an existing regulation on the federal write-in ballot, and the Supreme Court used that regulation in analyzing the challenge presented in Miller v. Treadwell. So I think that paragraph 13 is entirely consistent with the Miller v. Treadwell standard.
Other questions? Can I ask you, do you have an idea of what the cost was to the state for this litigation?
Oh, the litigation. Well, we did do a motion for attorney's fees in the Superior Court case, and I'm trying to remember. I mean, that was just the Superior Court case, and I'm trying to remember the number. I know that we can only, under Civil Rule 82, get 20%, and 20% was just under $17,000. So I think that it was it over $100,000? I don't remember, but it was quite a bit. We had a team of five attorneys. We were working around the clock, and it was a substantial. Oh, I mean, Ms. Fanumiai is writing me a note, and perhaps... $85,000 to $100,000 for the Superior Court case. The Supreme Court case was done on a very expedited basis, so I think it's probably a little less. And then, of course, there's the federal court litigation as well. So
I guess
a lot of money.
I have two thoughts in why we should pass this bill. One is because judges have strongly urged us to pass the bill because of the way the statute is written. It's not very well written. But secondly is the tremendous cost that this has cost the state. And this isn't necessarily done. In the future, if someone decides to challenge this, they could go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and they could go to the United States Supreme Court potentially, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And do you have a sense on how much it would cost to take a bill to the Ninth Circuit or to the United States Supreme Court?
Well, it would probably cost at least as much as we've expended on this case.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Thank you. Yeah, Ms.
Chairman, I did have one other thing I'd like to inform the committee, that the Lieutenant Governor and the Division of Elections are going to start a undertaking a comprehensive review of the 2010 general election and look at statutes and potential legislative changes that may be required. And so just letting you know that you might possibly see additional election-related legislation presented before you this session. And I do have, if I can, pass out to you a copy of the letter to you and Representative Lynn from the Lieutenant Governor, as well as a memorandum outlining what the review is going to entail.
Thank you. If you could give that to Michelle, and then she'll get copies to all of us. And I did speak with Lieutenant Governor Treadwell recently, and he mentioned that he was going to do that, and I said that we'd be happy to work with him on that. If we could get, I see Alpheus Bullard in the back. If you could come forward, I know you're not signed up to testify, but I just want to maybe see if we can get some clarification on the way the bill's drafted and see if there's any questions for Mr. Bullard. Hate to put you on the spot like this. You can put yourself on the record.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Alpheus Bullard. I'm an attorney for Ledge Affairs. And if there are any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Any questions on the way the bill is drafted? Or Senator Passman had an idea of adding some language to this. Did you have any opinion on that, whether that might be needed?
If that, through the chair, if you'd like to add some acknowledgement of the Supreme Court's decision, there were a number of things decided in that case. It wasn't just restricted to the interpretation of write-in ballots. When you craft statutes, you want it to be clear to the reader what's being conveyed. 5 or 10 years from now, people will be less familiar with that case than they are today. If you'd like to include that sort of reference, I would suggest some sort of uncodified provision in the session laws as opposed to adopting it into statute.
Questions? Yes, Senator Passman.
You know, the language, I believe, was taken from page 4, which is the section caption, but then the Supreme Court obviously develops that thought over a number of pages, and what I'm wondering is whether, and this was in version M again, so I'm just kind of framing my context of where I'm coming from, and obviously the case or the caption of the section isn't the opinion of the Supreme Court, it's the actual language that the Supreme Court will follow, and I just want to make sure that it's not providing a restriction on what the Division Director of Elections can do.
Through the chair, I don't believe the language in subparagraph 13 in either version of the bill will operate to restrict any future employee of the Division of Elections in interpreting voter intent.
Okay, other questions? All right, thank you, Alpheus. We have Senator French and Menard here, co-primes on this. Did either of you wish to come forward and say in a few words?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hollis French, representing District M in the State Senate. I am on this bill because I think it's important to put into statute what the Supreme Court directed us to do, which is to clear up the statute as it's written to make sure that future elections are done in a more regular manner. And I guess I'll just put in for me, the point was driven home probably most powerfully when the Daily News published a picture of some of the actual write-in ballots. And up until that time, I was a little bit divided about whether the statute, you know, required perfect spelling or whether it didn't. But once I saw the handwriting of a voter on a ballot, it really sort of drives home that that's a human being that has sort of left their home, gone to the ballot box, and is exercising, you know, their right to vote. And it just became very clear to me that you have to honor that effort and honor, you know, the intent of that voter. And it was very clear from the ballot who they were intending to vote for, despite a minor misspelling. And so I just think that this statute, and I thank Senator Thomas and his staff for leading the charge, is important.
All right, thank you. Questions? Okay, Senator Menard, did you have anything you wanted to add?
For the record, Senator Menard, representing District G, All of us went through that debacle of that election, and I felt strongly that there had to be some changes made, and so that's why I knew bright minds like the attorneys that we have in the Senate that serve would come forward, and as well they did. And I wanted to jump on board and make sure that in the future it's very clear. I think this will go down as history, and it's certainly the area I represent. It was I was distraught over all the hype that that had. And so, again, I am being part of championing this bill so we can have clarification. And, of course, that's what the judges have suggested, their opinion that we do. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to public testimony. We have Ben Brown, who I know is on a time crunch here. Thanks, Ben, for coming.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. My name, for the record, is Benjamin Brown. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, a voter, and an attorney, but I'm not here on behalf of any political party or any client. I'm actually here because I write a column every 2 weeks in the Empire, and I chose to write about some elections legislation, which I guess you probably saw, Mr. Chairman, so I hope my column was not a poorly stated thought about the problem. But I was here in Juneau for the ballot counting, and I saw the media reports like everyone else who's spoken, and it just struck me as unfortunate and unnecessary. I mean, there really was some ambiguity there, not enough to result in a different outcome. I think Judge Carey is a very smart judge. I believe all five members of our state Supreme Court are very smart jurists. And I think Judge Beistlein did the right thing from the federal perspective. But this is just an opportunity for the legislature to clean up a very important part of the Alaska Elections Act. And you can't ensure a lack of litigation, as Mr. Chairman, Senator Passman had mentioned, in the future. But I think it's a lot likelier that a judge would grant a motion for summary judgment in favor of the division with this language in the statute. And that, so it would be a miniature legal expense, you know, $20,000 as opposed to $100,000. And we have better things to do with our resources. Ms. Felix has other things she can work on as an assistant attorney general. And indeed, the director of the Division of Elections, other things she can allocate her attention to. So I think this is a really good bill. I think that the fact that it's already been improved almost before its first hearing shows that a lot of people are paying appropriate and close attention to it. And I encourage you to pass it and move it on.
Great. Thanks, Ben. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Next up, we have Ann Groening. Welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record, give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Ann Groening. I felt compelled to come here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 31, and in particular, Section 1, AS 1515. 360A13, if I said that correctly. This past November, I was a volunteer for Lisa Murkowski and spent in excess of 20 hours observing the write-in vote count here in Juneau. What I witnessed repeatedly during the write-in count were Murkowski ballots challenged due to poorly formed letters, K's, R's, W's, whatever, a heart or a star in place of a dot over an I, the word Republican written after Lisa Murkowski's perfectly spelled name, and the list of irrelevancies goes on. To me, the most offensive objections of all were the ballots challenged because the handwriting was shaky, even though it was obvious that great time and care had been taken to perfectly fill in the name. These were obviously ballots of our senior citizens. With her attorneys looking over her shoulder, Elections Director Gail Fanumiai pored over every challenged vote. She was consistent in counting only those votes which could be phonetically pronounced as Murkowski and where the voter's intent was obvious, even though a letter or two was missing. This is how it should be. And passage of this bill will clarify the process and prevent the expensive spectacle Alaska just had to endure.
Thanks, Ann. Thank Questions? You. Okay. Let's go to Fairbanks. I believe we have one person waiting to testify on this bill. Marilyn Reeves, are you there?
Hello, this is Marilyn Russell. Good morning.
I'm sorry. We have you down as Marilyn.
I am president of the League of Women Voters of Alaska, and I have a short paragraph. We, the League of Women Voters of Alaska, support Senate Bill 31 because it ensures the greatest number of voters are enfranchised to the greatest extent possible. We have always supported efforts to expand voting and voting rights to as many citizens as possible, and that is what this bill does. It gives more flexibility. If a name is misspelled, the voter's intent will be respected. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions? Okay, seeing none. Is there anyone else in Fairbanks wanting to testify on Senate Bill 31, this bill? Okay, hearing
none. Not that I'm aware of. Okay. Is there anyone else? No.
Okay, thank you. And then on the off-nets, we have Hedy Hume. Are there? Hedy Hume?
Yes, this is Hedy Hume.
Okay, hi, Hedy. Are you wanting to testify on this bill?
Yes.
Okay, if you could put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Hi, my name is Hedy Hume, and I work for the Disability Law Center of Alaska in Fairbanks. And our agency is the federally mandated protection and advocacy agency for the state of Alaska. Our comments on this bill are in regard to the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, which is one of our grants that we receive. As part of that grant, we have a Protection and Advocacy for Voter Access, or PAVA, which really takes into account access for people with disabilities. Our comments on this change to the bill are really in regards to people with disabilities and how, in this case, spelling errors by individuals will be systematically more pervasive than those made by individuals without disabilities. The disabilities could be a learning disability, they could be a cognitive disability, or even a motor disability. And we understand that the Division of Elections position is that if a voter's intent can be ascertained, that intent should be followed, even though the name has been misspelled. We hope that voters with disabilities are not disenfranchised because of an overly restrictive interpretation of the write-in voting laws. We just wanted to make sure we provided input as part of this discussion on this bill.
Okay, thanks, Hedy. See no questions. Next up on the off-nets, we have Scott Kendall. Scott, are you there?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Wilikowski, and thank you to the committee. My name is Scott Kendall. I'm an attorney with the law firm Holmes, Weddle & Barcott up here in Anchorage. I had the honor of representing Senator Murkowski's campaign. However, I'm not testifying in any way on behalf of her or her campaign today. I represented her in the matter of the write-in list, which the division provided during the election, and then, of course, during the post-election write-in count and location. I do agree with some of the senators with the concerns I've heard today that the law as it was, in light of the 40 years of case law from the Supreme Court, has always allowed for voter intent, and that the Supreme Court, in the language you've adopted here in the amendment to 360, it was just kind of, it was reiterating what we've always known about the law, that voter intent is paramount over all of any sort of technical concerns. I do want to also say that I think, you know, the division can't get enough credit for getting it right. I was there for the count. It was a long process. I probably personally looked at more ballots than anyone apart from Director Fanumiai there, and it wasn't really a tedious process. It was rather inspiring to see thousands upon thousands of people who've made that sort of effort where people can't be bothered to vote. Rather than make a single mark, these people had made, you know, typically 10 or 13 individual marks in order to vote for the candidate of their choice, and it was a rather, apart from the unpleasantness of the challenges to ballots, it was a rather inspiring event to be a part of. The division really had a well-organized system. They provided the written instructions for how it was going to be done, and again, they had a single person, the director, enforcing a uniform standard. There was a lot of I don't want to say mudslinging, but there was a lot of people calling into question the division, and I just wanted to reiterate what I think others have thought, is that they handled themselves with class throughout and ran a very efficient and a really nice process. Even though I've sort of laid out that I think the law as it is allowed for these misspelled ballots or allegedly misspelled ballots to be counted, I do think that there are two possible reasons to do this amendment. The first is that in attacking the counting of misspelled ballots, the Miller campaign could not say that it is illegal as a matter of, you know, federal or state law to count misspelled ballots. That is, you know, they could not argue that the federal constitution or some other law besides 360 simply won't allow it. Their argument was, at its base, that the legislature wrote 360 the way it wrote it, very, very specifically to throw out misspelled ballots, that the legislature's clear intent was to disenfranchise thousands in the event of a write-in campaign. And I don't think that's correct. And I think it would be positive for the legislature to amend in order to sort of make that clear. I've heard some of the concerns raised about, you know, can we just cite to the case law or something, and I think I do agree that it would be useful perhaps to put something in the uncodified law about this is simply a reaffirmation of the law as it's always been, because I don't think any Alaska legislature, previous or current, would ever have intended to throw out those ballots. But that was the argument. The other possible reason for amending is that elections law is all about the faith of the public, that they believe in the system, they put their faith in it, and that it will be conducted fairly. So if some portion of the public believes it's unclear, then putting it in writing the way you've done, at least in the version I've seen, adopting the Supreme Court's language, is entirely appropriate. You don't typically cite specifically to a Supreme Court decision, but pulling out this language nearly verbatim as this draft does, I think is entirely appropriate. I also think it's important because it makes it consistent with the language in the laws regarding overseas ballots. Because if it was left the way it was, it isn't consistent, because the law on overseas ballots essentially contains this information, so you'd have ballots looked at under two separate standards. The other concern is about making this more specific, and I agree with some of the prior testimony that you simply can't make it too specific, or you risk disenfranchising voters in a situation that hasn't come up yet. And it's important to remember that we're talking about write-in ballots here, so there is simply no way to remove the human element. A machine's not going to be able to read handwriting. So even if we had the law as currently drafted on the books, you could have had a situation where someone said, well, that's not an R, that's a U, or that's not an I, that's an L. So there's always going to be a human judgment that has to be made, and I think codifying the fact that the director, one single person, will make those calls makes it consistent and gets around any sort of equal protection issues. And I think it's also important, that human factor is also important, because you don't know what the surrounding events will be. Even though I'm sure the director takes each ballot on its face, indeed, in a election where there was two Smiths, or a Smith and a Smythe, or that sort of issue, certainly it would be a different, I think it would be a different judgment call, because it would be influenced by whether there was initial, not an initial, or whether you simply just couldn't make the call because it was ambiguous based on the surrounding circumstances. So in general, I do support the amendment for the reasons I've discussed. I do think the law as it's written allowed these votes to be counted under the 40 years of case law in Alaska from the Supreme Court. However, providing for the public confidence in the process and to make clear that the Alaska legislature had never intended to disenfranchise thousands upon thousands of voters, I think would only be a positive. If the committee has any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
All right, thanks, Mr. Kendall. Questions? Okay, seeing none, appreciate that comprehensive testimony. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Okay, hearing none, anyone in the room wishing to testify? Okay, I'm going to close public testimony. It's my intention to hold most bills, if not all bills, for at least two committee hearings to give members adequate time to consider them proposed amendments. If any members have suggested amendments to this bill, please deliver them to my staff or Michelle by tomorrow at 3 if possible. It's my hope that we can move the bill on Thursday. Are there any committee discussion before we move on? Yes.
Senator, I would just like to personally commend the director. I think when the Supreme Court says that the director acted with common sense in a way that didn't need to be provided in advance by a rulemaking process, I think that needs to be recognized, and you know, I think that that's awesome. So,
Yeah, agree. I think many people feel that you did a great job, myself included. So thank you. Questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you to the bill sponsor as well. Let's move on now to Senate Bill 33, an act relating to the disposition of remains of a member of the military if the member dies while in a duty status. The bill has three prime sponsors, Senator Passfan, Coghill, and myself, and one co-sponsor, Senator Menard. The bill will be presented today by someone new to the legislative process, Michael Caulfield, who's interning in my office and a senior at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and he's studying political science and plans to go to law school following graduation. And Mr. Caulfield, if you could please come forward, put yourself on the record, and give us an overview of the bill.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Michael Caulfield, an intern in Senator Wilkowski's office, and I'd like to thank Chairman Wilkowski and the State Affairs Committee for hearing this bill. In these times of war, it is vital that we hold service members in the highest regard and treat them with all the respect that they deserve. This is never more important than in honoring their final wishes in the tragic event of their death while on duty. The Department of Defense requires active duty service members, reservists, and guard members to complete a record of emergency data form annually or prior to deployment in which they stipulate who should manage the remains in the event of their death. Unfortunately, many states, including Alaska, do not comply with this form because no laws exist that recognize legal designees as the person in charge of the remains. Instead, they default to predetermined lists, generally starting with the spouse. Clearly, this can lead to disputes where the person named on the form differs from the automatic default, and they both wish to have authority over the remains. These situations can draw out an already painful process of mourning and burial. Senate Bill 33 solves this problem by amending Alaska statutes to recognize the person named on the emergency data form as the primary manager of the remains. This will stop disputes over who should have authority and help protect against the worst-case scenario when no one can be found to deal with the remains. Around 20 states already have laws which comply with the federal form, and in our doing so, we will be able to ensure our heroic soldiers' remains are handled by the person they truly desired. This bill is supported by the Alaska Veterans Association, the Office of the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, and the Alaska Chapter of Vietnam Veterans for America. I'd also like to add that Mark Sansusi from the Office of the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, Verdi Bowen from the Alaska Department of Veterans Affairs, and Rick Davidge from Vietnam Vets for America should be available to provide additional details and or testimony for the bill. Thank you, and I urge your support.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Questions? Okay. Seeing none. And let's see. We have a CS before us, /B. If I could get a motion to adopt that CS.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we bring before this committee or Senate bill sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 33, the /B version.
Okay, is there any discussion? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, just briefly, I think the bill's great, and I support it. I'm just curious. I've never heard of this being an issue or a problem. Has it been a problem in the past, for us?
There have been times when, it automatically defaults to the spouse right now. And if, say, the soldier who dies is estranged from the spouse but still married, it would automatically default to the spouse instead of the person written on the form who the soldier who died wanted his remains to be taken care of. So it can, be a debate there. And in terms of specific times, I would have to refer that to Mark Sansusi, who should be online to talk about that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And that makes sense that, should be up to the soldier to determine how that's taken care of. Okay. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Other questions? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sansusi, if I could, are you there?
Yes. Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. And I've been listening to Michael Caulfield, who did a great job. I have had a problem hearing people other than you. However, I've heard Senator Menard on the previous bill, so I will try my best to comply here. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Mark Sansusi. I'm the regional liaison for military families for the Department of Defense, covering the Northwest, including Alaska, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. on behalf of the Department of Defense, and in particular the Office of the Deputy Undersecretary for Military, Community, and Family Policy, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to submit the testimony today on SB 33. But first, I want to express our appreciation for your support the last 2 years in huge legislation for military families, the first being the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military School Children, and last year, the Child Custody Law you passed that became the benchmark and the gold standard for other states that are now modeling it. So thank you and thank the committee and your legislature for doing that. Prior to my current position with the Department of Defense, I spent over 23 years in the United States Air Force, and one of the experiences I will never forget in that time is putting on my dress blues on a Sunday afternoon to drive with my chaplain to the middle of Pennsylvania to personally deliver the official notification to two unsuspecting families that their loved one died while serving his country. Although unpleasant to think about, men and women die while performing military service, and easing the administrative burdens and laying their remains to rest is the least we can do to help the families through the bereavement process, and is at the heart of the purpose behind my testimony before you today. Our request contained in SB 33 is that Alaska state statute recognizes the federal law to direct the disposition, a person who directs disposition of their remains, that person is called a PAD. And so the PAD would be honored as the person who, in the event someone's killed, would and designated on the DD-93, would be the one who would be able to do all those duties that the PAD is expected to do. All service members are directed by the military to complete the DD Form 93 annually and before any deployment. The form gives them a choice of one of these. They can choose a surviving spouse, a blood relative of legal age, or adoptive relatives of the decedent. The DD 93 is an essential part of their military record, and it also is used for designating beneficiaries for a service member's death gratuity and any remaining unpaid paid and allowances. I repeat that service members do this form annually and before any deployment. Our request will ensure that the 93 is consulted and viewed as a legally sufficient document for designating the PAD so as to eliminate any potential confusion during this most emotionally draining time any family can experience. There has been sufficient blowback with civil actions and grief for our families to cause it to be, since 2009, one of our top 10 issues in the DOD state liaison office. The DOD does not specifically track statistical data on how often this has happened, but we know and our leadership has heard on numerous occasions and received enough information about the concerns from enough families through the chain of command to make it as one of our 10 issues. We now prefer to ask states and legislators like you to consider taking this action to preempt this kind of disaster from taking place in the future. Since last year, as Michael, I think, alluded to, 11 states have enacted laws to recognize the DD-93 as the authoritative document for use by service members. We also estimate that 9 states, in studying their statutes, have sufficient latitude to allow for its use. As of this legislative session, already 9 states have bills being actively considered in their 2011 legislatures. The remaining states do not provide for the designation of an agent, require use of a state-specific form, or require a certain type of witnessing that may preclude the recognition of the 93. In order to add clarity for our family members and funeral directors, we're looking to get statutes or revisions done in all 50 states. A typical case, I think, as Michael may have answered, is when the state law does not align or recognize the federal law instructing service members to designate a PAD and causing hardship is usually as follows. A deceased soldier who was married but estranged from his wife perhaps elects his mother as the PAD on the DD Form 93. The mother wanted to cremate the soldier. However, the funeral home refused to cremate the remains without the wife's consent based on the rules of the state. The spouse was reluctant to sign the consent for cremation, and only after a military attorney intervened did the wife eventually consent. Eventually, the wishes of this service member to have his mother direct disposition were honored. However, this situation and the unnecessary delay and grief it caused could have been avoided if the state statute in question had referred to the DD-93. This bill requests Alaska Statute 2605 to a policy change to recognize that person designated on the 93. And so you know, this includes all services, National Guard members, and reservists. Now, the intent here is not to slight a surviving spouse or others not named on the form, but simply to honor the request of the hero who died serving our country. The person who is designated as the PAT has an important job directing disposition and working with the funeral director and to ensure government payment of all expenses incident to death in accordance with Title 10 of USC. The list is long, and copies of that could be provided if you were so requested it. Some people have asked whether a member's last will and testament is affected by the designation of the PAD. While the requirement of a PAD is directed by Congress, a will is not. A will can be possibly 10 years old and way out of date. A will can be sitting in a person's freezer, so in case of fire, it is the last thing to burn. Processing a will through probate is not intended to conflict with the designation of the PAD. The establishment of a PAD should ensure a smooth process in laying the remains to rest without causing dispute among the family. Finally, so I can truncate this, the National Funeral Directors Association supports this legislation. We have talked to John Finch of the government, their government relations director. And we are very grateful to you, Mr. Chair, for sponsoring and those who are co-sponsoring and now considering passing this amendment. It is, we feel, the least we can do for our families, the families of our heroes who die serving their country. Thank you for your time and consideration. I will do my best, if you have any questions, to try and answer them. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Sansusi, and thank you for bringing this bill to our attention. I know there's a similar bill in the House, and appreciate your bringing this to our awareness. Questions? Okay, hearing none. Let's move on to Verdi Bowen. Are you on the line?
Hi, this is Verdi Bowen. I'm the Director of Veterans Affairs, and I'm just basically here for any questions that you might have on this bill and how it would really affect our Alaskan veterans and our active duty forces.
Thanks, Verdi. There's a question from Senator Pasvan.
I assume you support it, but if you could please state just directly that you do support it.
Well, sir, I can explain why the bill is important. I'll give you an example of why it's important for Alaska. Last year, we had 14 unclaimed remains that we found that was located at funeral homes around the state. And one of the set of the remains was a service member that had an estranged spouse that had left him while he was gone. And the assumption was that the brother was taking care of the remains, and that didn't happen. And so the long and the short of it is that the remains actually all got transported to the National Cemetery here at Fort Rich and was interred in the columbarium over here, and they were all provided the honors provided. But that is just one case in point. Now, those remains span time from 1995 to 2002. And with the amount of veterans and the amount of active duty members that we have lost over the last 10 to 20 years, that's really not a large percentage. But if they would have had a place to where the law protected the active duty member, and they would go back to the DD form or the DD form emergency data card, if you will, they would have discovered that on that form, the brother was the one that was supposed to take care of the disposition of the remains.
Do you support the bill, or does the administration support the bill, or do you have no position on the bill, Mr. Bowen?
We have no position at this time, sir.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Bowen? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. If you could hang on, Mr. Bowen, in case we do have other questions.
Yes, I will. I'm available for any questions, sir.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on. We have, I believe, one more person wanting to testify, Rick Davidge, president of the Alaska chapter of the Vietnam Veterans of America. Mr. Davidge, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you could put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
I'm Rick Davidge, chairman of the Alaska Veterans Foundation, president of Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 904, which is the largest chapter in Anchorage. I also serve as chairman of the Municipal Commission on Military and Veterans Affairs, which interacts with the active duty military here in Anchorage.
Just a couple of points. I think the specifics have already been touched on, but I want to thank the chairman for bringing this bill forward. His staff, Michael's worked very closely with us, and certainly we're very fortunate to have Bertie, one of the most competent people we've ever had in that position, and delighted to have him there. The problems usually develop in these circumstances, not with people who are overseas, because they make a real significant effort to get people to update their 93s, but if someone's killed in training within the United States, for example, and the 93 hasn't been updated, this is particularly true of older members of the service who've been in 20 or 30 years, it gets a little touchy. So that's one of the things, and I know the military is trying very hard to insist that all active duty members, Guard and Reserve, update their 93 annually. I did have a question with respect to the Coast Guard, if they're included, because they're not under DOD, they're under Homeland Security. I think Michael was looking into that. I didn't know if he got that answer. I did want to touch briefly on some of the things that are being done in Alaska, specifically focusing on veterans, although we are called often with respect to active duty members who are killed in action, either overseas or in training exercises in the United States or Alaska. We have an extraordinary relationship with the funeral homes in the state of Alaska who know what they're doing. I think every one of them has Bertie's phone number as well as mine. And we're working very closely with the hospitals, particularly Providence has been very assertive in working with us to ensure that we don't have any veterans dying alone. We're still working with Anchorage Regional on a cooperative agreement to try to ensure that as well. We don't have as well a working relationship with the churches. That's probably because there are so many of them in Alaska, but more and more churches who run into some questions or difficulties and don't know a Bertie often call us at the foundation. Virginia at the National Cemetery also, who works with the Veterans Administration, is extraordinarily helpful in dealing with many, many of these issues. We support this bill as a committee substitute and look forward to having the committee as well as the state legislature pass this session.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Michael, is there anyone else online wanting to testify? Anyone else in the room wanting to testify? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Michael, there was a question that was asked about whether or not the Coast Guard is covered. Have you been able to find the answer to that?
I have not. This just deals with Department of Defense regulations, though, so I do not know that, and I would have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, if you can do a little research on that and get back to us on Thursday. Any other questions for Michael? Okay, great. If we could just procedurally, I don't know that
I'll make the motion that we adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 33, version I.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay. Any objection? Okay. Version I is adopted. Okay. With that, we will close the hearing for today, and we'll take these bills up on Thursday along with a couple other new ones. All right. Thank you, and we're adjourned.